our taxes. The only country being taxed by this is the United States, right? There's no other country being taxed by this. It's just us. And yet they still don't seem to be able to figure. Although, of course, you know, as I noted before, support for tariffs is very low and it is not popular. But I imagine if I broke that down for Republicans, it would be much higher. And why is that? That's what I want to know. And so maybe I'll try to break down more of this polling tomorrow and bring that to you tomorrow. So and look at and of course, you know, they're afraid of losing Texas. Texas is getting more blue, and of course they lost a lot of the Latino vote, and so of course they had planned their redistricting around maintaining those, and even they even created more Latinx districts, thinking that they would hold on to that group, and you know, well, that may play against them in the end, right? And let's hope that Speaker Johnson is right, that if they lose the midterms, Trump's term is over, his second term is done. So thank you so much. Sorry about going a little long. This is Jacqueline Keeler, and this has been KVU's Wednesday Talk Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
Hi, this is Ray Lynn, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kbu.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kbu.fm.
Follow KBU on Instagram at KBU Radio. Ear to the Streets.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
I think this was in West St. Paul. Mexican restaurant. The guy who owns the restaurant with his wife, he is a naturalized citizen for 30 years. She was born here. She walks out the front door. They grab her. They say, show us your papers. She's like, I'm a U.S. citizen. And they're like, well, if you don't have any papers, we're taking you. He comes running out with her passport and gets between them, and they finally let her go. Comes back inside. They interview him on television. He's sobbing, puts his hand on his heart, and he says, I love this country more than my life. Why are they doing this to us?
I'm Christopher Wurst, host and producer of Soft, Powerful Stories. Today on Sprouts, we hear from a chorus of voices bearing witness to what has been happening on the streets of Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota.
Right now, I'm really feeling a jumble of emotions.
Frustration, more than anything else. This one is a little bit harder to see, like, light at the end of the tunnel still.
It's hard to fend off feelings of despair.
I feel numb or numbed.
After they murdered Renee Good, I had trouble concentrating at work on what I was doing because that was just running through my head.
I am simultaneously feeling helpless and hopeful.
Hopeful. Proud.
Proud of my neighbors for sticking together and organizing.
I also feel a brotherhood with the residents of Minneapolis.
Right now, I feel a mix of concern, hope, and determination.
It is heartwarming to see how such acts of violence can also be a force that brings community together.
I also feel hopeful when I drive down Lake Street and I see my community walking across the bridge every day in negative temperatures, just to make sure people keep their eyes on Minnesota.
Mostly sadness for all of the harm that has happened in my community.
There was anger and there was compassion for the people who were being victimized.
I feel empathy for the victims and their families. The world was a better place with Renee Good and Alex Pretty in it. None of this needed to happen, and now we have not one, but two American citizens murdered in the streets about 3 miles from where I live.
Occasionally raw, but not usually at school. At school, I often find ways that I can be a helper.
It's also important to hold on to the hope as well.
I am deeply concerned about the rise of authoritarianism in the United States.
When I was sworn in as an attorney, I took an oath to support the Constitution of both the United States and the state of Minnesota.
And they don't seem to care which amendment to the Constitution they want to violate at any particular time or any ruling by a judge. They've violated judicial rulings hundreds of times here. So the rule of law does not really exist here in a meaningful way for the population. We just don't know.
It's hard to see the rule of law being so carelessly disregarded and to feel that I can't do enough to uphold it.
I am very proud of our elected officials in Minnesota and the way they have responded. Very, very appropriately, they're focused on the rule of law, and there's a recognition that what is happening is not right.
It felt almost like, you know, the Trump administration and ICE were trying to provoke violence that they could then crack down on, so much so that in both videos of the ICE murders, you can clearly see that despite the blatant attempts to say otherwise, the people on the ground in Minneapolis are not violent. They are using their constitutional rights to the fullest extent and are protesting in a perfectly like peaceful and legal manner.
A lot of small businesses are keeping whistles for free at the front. I know my cousin is an artist and he is 3D printing and giving out whistles for free.
We have a lot of citizen observers. They've been trained. They're behaving in a legal way. They're there to record the violation of people's fundamental rights.
I think it can make it feel a bit more nerve-wracking, you know, because it feels like inches away from a potential like civil war if things went south, pun unintended.
We have lots of gun owners here in Minnesota, and that's kind of like that line that we all kind of sit on here, where we're all very socially liberal, but we still very much like our guns. And I'm one of those people as well.
Although it's ostensibly about targeting illegal immigrants, at the end of the day, it's really about power. And frankly, it feels like this particular geography, Minnesota and the Twin Cities, for a variety of reasons, is on the enemy list of the current administration. And they want to make life extremely difficult for us. And this was seen in the list of demands. One of the requests about like easing up on the crackdown is that they want to list voter registration information for people in Minnesota, which has nothing at all to do with this particular situation. For me, this is two sides of the same coin. The way the Trump administration is behaving internationally in the way they're behaving in Minnesota. In both instances, there's a fundamental disregard for the rule of law and basic human rights.
Even though I am fairly far removed where I live from anything that would be considered ground zero, I hear helicopters every night as I fall asleep. This morning, helicopters began at 4 in the morning. And the assault is relentless. I can't imagine what it would be like to be living closer to some of the neighborhoods where they are on the ground and very present all day long. I do see them coming to school and leaving school most days.
So we live on the east side in St. Paul. We have a Ring camera and it lets you see all the activity that's going around in your neighborhood. It's always ice spotted on this corner, ice going up to this house. Two nights ago, somebody knocked down my fence that looked like they ran into it. And 9 times out of 10, you would go, okay, that was probably just somebody that was leaving one of the bars, decided to hide down the alley and then lost control of their car and ran into my fence, right? But now there's that second part of you that's in you going, was this ICE that had the wrong house and then they just banged down my fence?
Trying to make a reservation at a restaurant, which I thought would be a really good idea instead of a boycott, to like say, okay, this is the day we're going to patronize immigrant restaurants. They have reduced hours or they're not even open because they can't staff their places. It's like, okay, we're open for lunch, we're closed for dinner. That's all we have. Sorry, can't do it. Owners working 16, 17, 18 hours a day because there's nobody else to work.
I've been watching what's unfolding in the Twin Cities with a heavy heart. There's real pain. People grieving lives lost, like Renee Good and Alex Preddy, and people trying to make sense of aggressive federal actions that have shaken trust and raised serious questions about safety and justice.
And where I work, I had to push on upper management to say, what's our policy if they come in? We have a lot of laborers who come in. What if they come in behind them? Like, what do we do? So we had to put up all these signs that say employees only for back rooms so that people could retreat to those back rooms if they felt unsafe.
One of my coworkers took a taxi on his way to work, got out of the taxi to walk into the building to work his shift, and was taken. He was not really allowed to contact people and needed to pay for legal representation with money that he doesn't have. And this is a small business. It's a small team and people really rely on him being there every day. People want him here. People don't want people taken. That's just someone on their way to work. I don't think that that's okay. And we're all neighbors, and like even yesterday, a 5-year-old boy was taken in his bunny hat on his way home from school.
Luis Ramos, the 5-year-old that was abducted and deported along with his father, was a student at the school in Columbia Heights where my nephew's girlfriend teaches. In the fundraising efforts, I was struck by the request for a lot of stuffed animals. The kids are looking for things that they can hold close because that may not be their parents. Luis is not a murderer nor a drug dealer, here from Ecuador on a legal asylum claim.
The Hmong elder, they break into this guy's house without a judicial warrant and drag him out. And they have the name of a guy who they insist was a child predator. All right, well, the guy that they're looking for was a homeless guy who never lived at that address and has been in jail for years. You drag this guy out of his home in a pair of shorts and Crocs, no shirt, and his daughter hadn't put a blanket around him, he would have been freezing. I mean, it's 25 below zero when they're dragging this guy out of his house. They drive him around for an hour. They bring him back. They don't apologize. The door to their house is broken down. They battered it.
I know a lot of people are exhausted who honestly wonder if this constant tension will ever change. And I also know people who see the same moments from completely different perspectives. Immigrants, lifelong Minnesotans, people who've made mistakes, people trying to do right, all walks of life. Staying in conversation with all of them keeps me grounded. It reminds me this isn't about sides. It's about slowing down, listening, and remembering each other's humanity. And that's exactly why I don't think Minnesotans are backing down. We show up. We care about our neighbors, even when it's uncomfortable.
I am not from Minnesota, but I've lived here for 36 years. It has become the best and most cherished home of my life because of the people, because of my family, because of the community. If you're not from here, it's hard to understand that people in the Twin Cities especially, they look out for each other. They step up for each other.
I think the community has been amazing. I think there's a deep sense that we're in this together. These people are our neighbors. Minnesota, the Twin Cities, does not have the highest per capita immigrant population in the United States, which makes it an odd choice. But we do have the highest per capita level of refugees, and there's a long tradition, and many faith communities have been involved in this, of receiving people from other parts of the world, troubled parts of the world, and integrating them into our communities. And it has made this a far more interesting place.
And then Trump targeting the Somali community, calling Somalis garbage, not even really calling them Somalis either, calling them Somalians because he doesn't know what they're called. The level of disrespect, calling them garbage. They're kids who were born here, going to school the next day after he said that. The president of the country that where they are citizens has called them garbage. It's so disgraceful. It's almost beyond comprehension that this is going on in the 21st century here in the United States.
In my travels around the world, I've just been pleasantly surprised by the kindness of strangers. And I have always felt when I encounter people from other countries, people were so kind to me as an outsider, I want to be kind to them. And I think that ethic and that norm is also in the Twin Cities.
I believe that all people are bound by the desire to look out for others, especially the ones that might have trouble fighting the fight with the deck stacked against them.
The majority of the immigrants that are in our state are good, hardworking people. Obviously, I don't want any of these people to leave the country.
I got a message from my cousin who gets all of his news from right-wing media. Are there gangs of Somalians, of course, roaming the streets of Minneapolis, and people are stuck in their homes because they're afraid to go out because they think they're going to be the next victim? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He shows me the article from the New York Post. I'm like, these people will publish anything. But here's the rub. There are people right now in their homes afraid to come out because they're afraid they're going to be victims of the gangs that are roaming the streets. And it's the government doing it. It's not a bunch of Somalis running around trying to kill people or breaking down their doors of their homes, you know, or kidnapping them. That's not what they're doing. It's the federal government doing it to us.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Christopher Wurst, host and producer of Soft Powerful Stories. We're listening today to people from Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota, describing their lives since the federal government's ICE surge began.
Our diverse population is really what brings a lot of this beauty and creativity and sense of community to the cities. Whenever I think about leaving Minnesota, I think about our community and how it would be such a hard thing to leave. Yeah, it's just a really beautiful thing.
The school I'm at has about 650 students. It is a Title I school, which means the majority of students and families are below the poverty line. And the majority, in this case, at this school, are students and families of color. The first couple weeks, maybe there were about 100 absences per day. Since last Tuesday, when ICE showed up in our parking lot, that number has doubled to about 200 students per day. Families deciding it is not safe to send my child to school. Fortunately, I am at a school and in a district that is very supportive for families that are adversely affected and are staying home. We are providing an online component, much like during COVID, but as has been pointed out by numerous people, COVID, even though it adversely affected people of color, it wasn't targeting people of color the way that this is, the way that ICE is and this administration is right now.
My husband of 34 years is an elementary school teacher at a school that is 80% children of color. ICE was in their parking lot this week, just sitting there to intimidate families who were coming to pick up their kids. My husband wants to focus on educating the kids, but they're in emergency meetings to figure out how to protect those children. and it's hard to see him come home, and you can see the pain. It's not right. It's not right.
The resilience of people to donate, to help out, to protest in Minnesota is off the charts. We have families looking at our school. We are doing 2 food deliveries every week, and we have families trying to figure out how they can help, asking how they can volunteer to help out with food deliveries. We also have volunteers who are patrolling our neighborhoods and reporting and helping marshal, I guess, for lack of a better term, our arrival and dismissal times to make certain that our families can get their students to school safely and leave and get home safely. There are families waiting at bus stops, making certain everybody can get from door to door safely.
A lot of schedules had to be rearranged because now people are going to their schools to be monitors for their children as they're leaving and they're picking them up, which is really sad. I had a meeting with a coworker last week and he didn't show up. The reason he didn't show up was he got a call from his kid's school. They were originally from California. These are obviously like preteen kids, you know, they're still in elementary school. And so they were making fun of her because she was from California and they were telling her that she's going to be taken away by ICE. And so it's just sad because at a level that, you know, they're still just like the kid, it's now getting to the kids and the kids are bullying each other over it, right? Just an extra level of fear.
On Saturday morning, I was meeting with some of my students at the law school when Alex Pretty was killed 3 miles away. What to do when you walk into a classroom and all of your students are huddled around a cell phone watching a video of one of their fellow citizens being killed in the street is not something that any adjunct professor is trained on how to handle. What did we do? We sat, we talked, we shared our feelings for 45 minutes. We certainly disregarded class because that is the least of students' worries right now.
Here in Minnesota, it's deeply unsettling. Where I teach at McAllister College, there are lots of international students. You know, I have colleagues in my own department that were born outside of the United States. Everyone is here legally. You know, by definition, if you're in academia, you're all here legally, but they're scared. People who have young kids in daycare centers, they've been targets. Some have pulled their kids out of daycare. And so now you've got parents juggling, taking care of a kid at home in addition to their jobs. People who have older kids in high school, ICE shows up when high school gets out and they start tear gassing people because they think there's someone who works there that is an immigrant. And so now kids have to shift to online learning. And we all know from the COVID experience that that does not work well. Well, I'm an educator and I'm biased, but I think education is important. And oftentimes we're very focused on the vocational aspects of education and getting a job, but there's also learning about how to be a good citizen in the world and civic responsibilities and not only learning about governance in our own country, but also other parts of the world and being able to move responsibly on that global scene.
What gives you the sense that our Minnesotans won't back down?
That's kind of easy because I know that I won't.
Why I know that Minnesotans won't back down is because on Friday, the wind chill made it feel like negative 30, and that didn't matter.
When I saw over 50,000 people marching in sub-zero temperatures, and I don't think people who aren't from this part of the country understand just how cold it can get here in Minnesota.
If you haven't been in negative 30 degree weather, it is brutal. It is a health risk. Online, you might see warnings about trees exploding. It's so cold.
The mere fact that nearly 50,000 Minnesotans showed up in 18 below zero temperature to demonstrate peacefully, to protest ICE being in Minnesota and support one another to support the immigrants and the people of color who are being targeted shows who we are and what we are made of.
We had the 50,000 person protest the day before Alex Pretty got shot, right? That was a very good signal. But also, after Alex got shot, even more people around me stood up. We were angry before, but now we're extremely angry.
Minnesotans are definitely a different breed, and we're not backing down. Our sense of community, along with our ability to distinguish right from wrong, will help us weather this storm.
If you're listening from outside of Minnesota, just know this. We care deeply about justice, dignity, and community. We've always been shaped by art, activism, and people willing to stand up for one another. We're asking hard questions right now, but we still believe a more compassionate future is possible. I'm proud of Minnesota, not because we're perfect, but because we keep trying.
Minnesota nice means that we are nice, but we also don't tolerate when people are not being nice to one of our own. When that happens, people are smart and we rally.
There are strong sort of neighborly norms here, and it's nice. That gives me hope that in the face of outside aggression, that has not melted. If anything, it's become stronger.
We are going to continue standing up, making our voices heard, whether it's out at that Sub-Zero march, whether it's your small social media following. Minnesotans want people to know that we love the diversity of our state. We love the communities in our state. And that is not something that can be diminished through intimidation by our government.
My life has always been about connection through art, storytelling, photography, and music. And moments like this remind me how powerful it is to truly see one another. A photo, a song, a shared story can cut through the noise and remind us that we're human first. That's what gives me hope. It's also been inspiring to see artists and photographers like Mike, who goes by Bump Opera, showing up right in the middle of the chaos. His images don't sensationalize anything. They tell the truth. They capture what's really happening here through the eyes of someone who genuinely values people. I hope someday those images are archived because they show how tragic this moment has been, but also how connected, resilient, and unafraid we've become as we try to be better together.
Now I have people that are even closer to me that are engaging in actions that they engaged in during George Floyd and things I talk about, like gathering supplies and donations to hand out to families that are incapable now.
It, I think, also serves to unify the community even more. I remember there's like video that kind of went viral of some Somali women like handing out sambusas, and it really does feel like the city has come together in a weird way. I'd almost say it's healing, but I think for it to fully heal, ICE does need to fully leave.
They didn't bother to even understand who we are culturally. There's soccer moms lining up to join the resistance. Renee Good was one of those soccer moms. She dropped her kid off at school, and because she's resisting, she was murdered. They should have expected it. It's who we are. You know what it's like. You grew up here, you know. You're driving down the road. Somebody's car breaks down. You pull over and you give them a hand. I mean, that's what we do. We get a blizzard. We shovel each other's walks. We clear snow for each other. We take care of each other. It's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that they do not understand who we are. I mean, it's so obvious. That's not going to change. We're not going to be beaten into submission. If anything, it makes us rise up more.
As citizens here in the state of Minnesota in the dead of winter in negative 20 degrees, as it gets warmer, we just get more active. We're in it for the long haul.
This might be an overstatement, but I think of what the British did to Boston. They go in there with an armed force to suppress these people, and everywhere they go, they're harassed by the people they're trying to suppress. And they end up killing some of them. And as a result, they end up losing control of the entire situation and they have to leave. They had no control over Massachusetts. They lost the entire place. It didn't have to happen that way. And it doesn't have to happen that way here, but they seem to think that the more they push on us, they're going to break us. And the more they push, the more we push back.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to Soft, Powerful Stories. Special thanks to all our voices, and they're listed in our show notes at softpowerfulstories.org. Music you heard was performed by Abe Sada, Blue Dot Sessions, Adrian Berenguer, and BOPD. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase globally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Christopher Wurst, in, of all places this week, Sibiu, Romania. Thanks for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
This is Dr. Caldicott talking on 90.7 FM KBOO. You all realize how terribly important this radio station is now that the federal government is trying to cut funds for National Public Radio. And you all realize that the real truth only comes out of public radio and that all the rest of the media is compromised and represents the corporations who are destroying the earth. So you absolutely have to support KBOO with lots of money now. It's important.